I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, syndicated columnist Gustavo Arellano, who writes the column Ask a Mexican for the OC Weekly, and David Hoffman. He's a contributing editor at both Foreign Policy Magazine and The Washington Post. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. It's good to be back. Hey, fellas, how we doing?
Hey. What's
up? Good. Hey, Michelle, you know what? I guess we should be welcoming you back to the shop, too. You were out last week. Did you miss us?
Let me think. No. Beach in Florida. Studio in Washington, D.C. Beach in Florida. I don't think so.
Tough choice. Tough choice, yes.
Anyway, some sad news for some. Daryl Gates, Los Angeles police chief, during, of course, those deadly 1992 riots, has died after a short battle with bladder cancer. He was 83 years old. And of course, this is a figure who was, I think, larger than life for many people. Many people thought of him as, you know, a cop's cop and just really revered by many of the people who worked for him. But, of course, there's this other side of his legacy and the way he handled the riots and the events leading up to the riots. And, Gustavo, I'm interested in how you're reacting to this information.
The rank and file might have idolized Daryl Gates, but the people of color in Los Angeles County, despised the man. The whole riots of 92 basically happened because of a police department that kept brutalizing African-Americans and Latinos time and time again. The one thing I will say, though, that's an interesting legacy with Gates is that he also created something called Special Order 40 back in the late 70s that essentially told his police officers to not ask any detainees or anybody about their immigration status. And his, even though he's a conservative, his rationale as a police officer was saying, we're here to fight crime. We're not here to arrest illegal immigrants. We don't care about that. We don't want to scare people into not trying to report crimes to us. Of course, the batons of his cops did quite the opposite effect. And the last thing I'll say about Gates, he also created the SWAT team that's now all across the United States, but he created it specifically to destroy the Black Panther Party in Los Angeles. In fact, that was their debut in that infamous shootout that happened in Los Angeles with the Black Panther Party. So a very mixed legacy, but I think more toward the worse than toward the better.
Just to clarify, the initial Rodney King beating was accomplished by or performed by police officers from Simi Valley, and Daryl Gates was the chief of the Los Angeles Police Department. And of course, again, we're talking about the response to the riots and all that leading up to it. And of course, that doesn't take away anything from what Gustavo had to say. Arsalan, do you have any thoughts about this?
Yeah, I mean, sort of piggybacking off of what Gustavo just said, Daryl Gates seemed to sort of exemplify the Los Angeles of Dragnet and L.A. Confidential fame. You know, he didn't sort of exemplify what Los Angeles has become. The sort of Los Angeles Lakers Staples Center, more modern Los Angeles. Some other interesting things. During one congressional testimony, he was completely unabashed in saying that casual drug users should be shot. He also had a gaffe with the Latino civil rights group once, where he told a Latino police officer that he hadn't studied hard enough and that he's lazy. And one good thing that he did start, like the SWAT thing that Gustavo had mentioned, was the DARE program, the Drug Abuse Resistance Education Program. The first pilot program was his in Los Angeles. So that was one positive legacy that he had.
The other thing I want to mention is I had a series of lengthy interviews with Daryl Gates long after 1992, after he published his memoir. And one of the things I found interesting about him is he was very open about talking about his philosophy. There was not this attitude that this is my way or the highway, and you just, salute and move on. That he was very accessible and willing to discuss his point of view, whether you agreed with it or not. And I just think it's one of those, he's one of those polarizing figures that people are never going to agree on. And just a really interesting mixture of characteristics and qualities. And I think he also cared very much about his city. And I think it grieved him that other people didn't see that he did. I just want to throw that in. It's just a very, very complicated and interesting character. So, Jimmy, anyway, another story?
Yeah. Let's jump to another topic. So, Michelle, as I understand it, getting around D.C. was pretty hectic on Monday and Tuesday because President Obama hosted 47 countries at a nuclear security summit in the nation's capital.
I know you weren't really that concerned about our traffic difficulties, but
not
I will
really,
say
no.
It was pretty intense around here watching these sharpshooters across the street at the convention center. It was not my idea of a good time. But the purpose of the summit was to have an open dialogue about how better to secure nuclear stockpiles around the world. And I've got some tape of President Obama addressing those heads of state at the conference.
2 decades after the end of the Cold War, we face a cruel irony of history. The risk of a nuclear confrontation between nations has gone down, but the risk of nuclear attack has gone up. Nuclear materials that could be sold or stolen and fashioned into a nuclear weapon exist in dozens of nations. Just the smallest amount of plutonium, about the size of an apple, could kill and injure hundreds of thousands of innocent people.
Well, I'm grateful that David Hoffman follows this stuff, because I really want to know, did this summit accomplish anything?
Well, it's great to be here. And, you know, this summit accomplished a lot of talk. And now that they've all gone home, it's going to be a lot harder to turn that talk into action. It's a good thing that they had it, but we shouldn't just breathe a sigh of relief like the Cold War's over, the problem's over, the summit's over. It's not.
Jimmy, do you know, I'm curious about how this was playing for you. You know, outside of Washington. I mean, we were laughing about the traffic issues and so forth. But it's, you know, mm-hmm. I remember, and you and I are close in age, when the nuclear
close-ish.
Threat was close-ish. But the nuclear threat was still something that we talked about. I mean, I don't remember. I'm not sure if I'm remembering whether we still had those drills under the desk or whatever like that. But I remember being a kid and being raised to think about the nuclear threat. Did you?
No, I mean, we were more concerned about what we were going to eat or if we were going to eat, you know. So, and I think a lot of people are on that. You know, it's difficult to think about the macro when you're dealing with the micro. So, you know, I think people that can afford cable news channels where people sit around and debate about nuclear summits are concerned. But, you know, the rest of us are just trying to, you know, put the rent together.
Well, so it isn't on your radar doesn't make it not important. I'm sorry.
I'm not saying that it's not important. I'm just saying to some people it's not on their radar because they're more concerned with the day-to-day. You know, and I don't know how we change that. You know, I do know how we change that by putting poverty and jobs on the agenda. And then we'll get people's attention. But you talk about nuclear summits, you know, people are trying to figure out what's for dinner.
Hmm. Arsalan, what do you think?
Well, I think what was, piggybacking off what David said, I think what was more significant recently was the signing of the START Treaty, the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty in Prague between the U.S. and Russia, which called for the lowering of nuclear stockpiles. On this day, there are currently China, France, India, Israel, Pakistan, Russia, U.K., and the U.S. with nuclear weapons. We have about 2,600 more than anyone else, whatever. Anyway, what I think is most important as a human rights lawyer who's very interested in nuclear nonproliferation is the pushing of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, which is known as the NPT. Currently, there are four major countries, India, Pakistan, North Korea, and Israel, who are non-signers of that treaty. And in those four countries, we have a lot of regional politics in play. And so I think that many people in the human rights arena are a little bit tired of, you know, a lot of this talk that's going on during the nuclear summit, which is really about nuclear terrorism and not the actual decrease of proliferation, and I think that's something that needs to be considered as well.
Can I get David's take on that? You think that's true?
Yeah. You know, I think that the START Treaty, it's like a maintenance contract, right? You know, you buy a new appliance, you sign the thing, but it's not a big breakthrough, you know.
Right.
To sign a contract that we're still going to have 1,550 warheads in Russia and here aimed at each other 18 years after the end of the Cold War, I think is sort of maintenance of the status quo that we don't need. The Air Force did a study recently, and they said for deterrence, for military purposes, we need only 311 warheads, one-fifth of the amount we just signed away for the next 7 years. So my point really is, and I wrote this book about the Cold War and went back and looked at the whole history of it, you know, took out all those records, read everything again, tried to think about where we are. And you know where we are? We're still stuck fighting the last war.
Does that frustrate you?
Yes, a lot, because there are big challenges today. You know, there are people in the world that want to do evil things. There are danger and threats, and we need to face the threats of today. And one way to do that is to realign our resources, our forces, toward the threats we have today. Do you think that any of those 9/11 attackers paused for a minute because we have an intercontinental ballistic missile with a nuclear warhead? No. And by the way, look at all the attacks since then. There has not been a nuclear terrorist attack yet. There might be, if they find the tools and they find the stuff, the uranium and plutonium, that's what this summit was about. But we ought to think about the real threats we face and act on the leftover business of the Cold War.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the barbershop with journalists Jimmy Israel, Arsalan Iftikhar, Gustavo Arellano, and David Hoffman. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Oh, snap. Guess who's busy? Conan O'Brien. Now, you know what?
To move to something really important.
Right. There was an announcement on Monday that cable network TBS is giving him a late night show scheduled to air in November, Michelle.
Well, we know you're a Team Coco fan since day one.
True that.
But here's one of the things I'm curious about. Conan has complained so bitterly about Jay Leno bumping him out of his spot, but now he's bumping George Lopez tonight to midnight. And if you're interested, here's George Lopez talking about this with his guest Chris Rock on Monday. Here it is.
Will Conan coming to TBS?
Yes, yes. Conan's coming.
Yes.
And where are you going?
I'm staying. I'm going to midnight. He's coming out 11 o'clock and I'm going to midnight.
Get the hell out of here. So you're going to move for the white man, huh?
I am. I am. Hey.
I hope he appreciate this.
I think the white man does appreciate it very
okay.
much.
Okay. You don't got to clean or park nothing, right?
No.
Okay.
No. And okay. I get to go to work an hour later. And
okay.
That's a Latino dream come true. Okay. An hour later.
Thanks for that tape, Michelle. Gustavo. You know what? Conan is basically bumping Lopez out of late night, much like what Jay Leno was trying to do to Conan before Conan left NBC. Gustavo, you know, you write that column, Ask a Mexican, so, you know, I guess I will. I mean, does this make Conan a hypocrite?
You know what? I would say yes, except unlike Jay Leno, Conan actually went to George beforehand and said, look, your bosses have given me this opportunity. It's something that interests me, but I'm asking you for your permission to be able
right.
to do that. And it, by all accounts, George said, yeah, come on down. You know, let's do it. Let's get a really great block of programming that'll be both the idiot Jay and the even, you know, the just weak, you know, unfunny Jimmy Fallon. So if George is fine with it, I'm fine with it. And actually, you know, I love George Lopez's stand up. I love the George Lopez show. I haven't been a fan of Lopez Tonight. It just really hasn't hit me. But maybe by moving back to midnight, maybe that'll even improve Lopez Tonight and really make it into the show that it should be.
Jimmy, what do you think? Jimmy, what do you think? I don't know. Arsalan, what do you think?
Well, I think that it's a win-win situation for everyone involved. You know, Lopez Tonight currently averages about 800,000 viewers, and Conan, at the top of his game, averaged about 2.6 million. And so if Conan brings, you know, even half of that 2.6 million to the 11 o'clock time slot, I think there's going to be a great carryover to Lopez Tonight. And I think the main competition is going to be against The Daily Show with Jon Stewart at 11 p.m. between him and Conan O'Brien.
I think we should put Hoffman on the spot. Are you team team
no,
Conan?
Think...
Are you team Leno?
The Hofstra.
Where are you?
I got a good idea about this. Listen, what's really happening here is the platform doesn't matter anymore. The place where Conan is where he is. And I think when he succeeds on TBS, everybody's going to see that. NBC, TBS, it doesn't really matter who's delivering them. It matters what you're watching and whether you like it. It's a huge market, and the market will go where they see something they like. I mean, look at Jon Stewart.
That's so zen. That's so zen.
Very,
that's so
very
like
Marshall
Deepak
McLuhan.
Chopra. That's like,
and there's really no down. Like, there's really no down for George Lopez, you know, because, I mean, his base crowd doesn't have any, I mean, there's this plethora of Latinos to watch on TV. So, I mean, they're aching to see their face on TV. So, I mean, there's no big down. I mean, because Conan's crowd will stay on to support Lopez just on GP, on General Principle.
Jimmy's speaking for Latinos now. That's really cute.
Michelle, it's not me speaking for Latinos. It's me speaking having two eyes. I mean, there are not a lot of Latinos on American TV. I mean, let's
True.
Just. I got two eyes.
But
people
think he's funny. Go ahead.
I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean they think he's funny. But that is. That's a big chunk of his core crowd. So I think they're going to follow him wherever he goes. So I think Conan's crowd, people are going to just stay in and support Lopez because. Because Lopez is riding with Coco, and I'm riding with Coco, too.
I know.
Team Loco is what's up.
Okay, that's what's up. Okay. And it's hard, but it's fair, right? Let me just be the first to say.
True that.
But before we let you go, NBA playoffs just getting underway. Jimmy, your home team, the Cavaliers.
Yeah, that's right.
Favorite.
You know how we do it.
Okay, so finally. What do you got?
Oh, well, Cleveland all the way. A-Train.
Yawn.
Listen,
Arsalan.
NBA playoffs, 40 games and 40 nights, win or go home. I'm picking L.A. over Dallas in the West in 7 games. I have to pick my Boston Celtics over the Magic in 6. And I have to go with Kevin Garnett, Paul the Truth, the Whole Truth, and Nothing But the Truth Pierce, and Ray Jesus Shuttlesworth Allen to bring home another NBA banner and knock off the L.A. Lakers.
All right. Snap, Gustavo.
It's going to be Lakers versus Cavaliers. And I'm a LeBron fan. I'm a Lakers fan, but a LeBron fan, and I don't like Kobe. Kobe's way too beat up. LeBron's going to take it, and then the big decision. Is he going to New York, or is he staying in Cleveland?
Oh,
wow. Staying in Cleveland.
Okay, all right. Hoffman,
I hope to.
Hoffman, where are you on this?
Nowhere.
No NBA for you, man. No NBA. Turn in your guy card, man. What's up?
Yeah, really.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
All right, Michelle. I'm passing the rock to you.
Okay. No, I'm still thinking about baseball. I'm just trying to wrap my head around the Nats and, you know, trying to figure out where I am on that. Isn't that a shame? You know what I mean?
With
the Knicks, my team. It's how it is. And, of course, you know, and then there's, you know, the Wizards. I'm trying to, you know, cast down my bucket where I am, as it were.
The Jets should be good next year.
Oh, thanks a lot, Arsalan. Thanks a lot. All right. Thanks, fellas. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist and author of the book, The Denzel Principle. He joined us from WCPN in Cleveland. Gustavo Arellano is a syndicated columnist who writes the column Ask a Mexican. He joined us from member station KUCI in Irvine, California. David Hoffman is a contributing editor at both Foreign Policy Magazine and The Washington Post. He's the author of The Dead Hand, the untold story of the Cold War arms race and its dangerous legacy. He was in Washington. And Arsalan Iftikhar is a civil rights attorney, the founder of TheMuslimGuy.com and a legal fellow for the Institute for Social Policy and Understanding. He was here with me in our DC studio. Thank you all so much.
Peace.
Take out.
Thank you.
Yep.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.